Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck!
I only got one thing to say to you. Strike this mother out.
He got a perfect game and one done by the King.
Hey, you! Are you right there, Apple?
Took away a game-tying home run for Manny Ramirez.
That's my thing, fellas.
We will see you tomorrow night.
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for visiting us this evening.
Well, Brody, here we are. It's Monday, September 30th. Day before October, and I am absolutely buzzing because it's the day before the playoffs, and I feel like they have already started because of this incredible day of baseball given to us by the Atlanta Braves and the New York Mets, both of whom just advanced to the wild card round today. We'll talk about the circumstances that these teams were put in and how they handled it in just a moment, but first things first, this was one of the most electric days of baseball in a long time. How did you feel watching it, and what were your main takeaways?
Yeah, man, what a day. That was awesome. So, totally, completely agree. Playoffs started. Like, that was day one of the playoffs. Sometimes, like, every few seasons, we get lucky that the playoffs get to start in the regular season with, like, a 162 that has, like, implication. That was some good stuff today. That first game is going to go down as one of the best baseball games I think I've ever watched. That list, every time a new entry gets added to it, you know it's a good day. I watched it at work, of course. I happen to work with a lot of Mets fans. They were losing their minds, and I actually found myself rooting for the Mets, which is something that I never thought that I would do, but I actually really find this Mets team likable. There were a lot of different opinions on Carlos Mendoza, on Edwin Diaz, on Pete Alonso, on Tylor McGill. Like, there were thoughts that were just getting thrown around on how everybody was letting certain people down, certain people letting other people down, certain people were lifting other people up. But then Francisco Lindor in the ninth inning happens, and hell breaks loose. It was awesome. A nice little congratulations to the Mets for making the playoffs. They earned it. What a hell of a run down the stretch. And I look forward to them probably getting bounced either in the first or second round. And I think that'll be really fun. But I also just want to say the people who took away from this game that Lindor should be the MVP, also I think a little bit out of their minds, maybe a little bit of recency bias. But it was a hell of a performance today. And I am very glad that we got some playoff baseball for game 161 and 2.
Usually if we get a day like today, it's a game 163, or we get some special circumstance where, you know, two teams have to fight it out with massive implications on a day that they didn't think that that was going to happen. And today sort of had that happen twice because, you know, I mean, yeah. If you don't entirely know what we're talking about, Hurricane Helene ravaged a lot of people's homes and towns, killed a lot of people last week, displaced others, and it's absolutely been horrifying to see the aftermath of what happened across North Carolina and much of the Southeast. One incidental thing that happened in the wake of the weather last week was that the Braves and Mets had two games that were scheduled to be played in Atlanta, canceled right at the end of the season, and since they were games to determine playoff spots, they had to be made up today in a doubleheader to determine who will advance to the playoffs the very day before they begin. And we were unsure exactly who would need what until last night, when it became clear that each team needed to win one game today to make the playoffs. And if either team got swept, that team would miss the playoffs and the Arizona Diamondbacks would get in. Totally wild stuff. If I was a fan of these teams, I would have been totally freaking out. I mean, unable to think about...
Oh my God, I can't even imagine being a Diamondbacks fan today.
God. Yeah, I mean, I would have been unable to think about anything else for any of these three fan bases. And, you know, happily for those Braves and Mets fans, those rival fan bases, they both got into the playoffs, and I saw a couple pictures. They're currently partaking in a dual celebration full of champagne. At least a couple of players on the team met up to sort of congratulate congratulate each other. We got to talk about game one because it was one of the craziest games of the year. And part of what made it that way is how normal it seemed through the first seven innings. Spencer Schwellenbach was lights out. Ozzie Albies hit a two-run home run. And Atlanta had a 3-0 lead going into the eighth inning when all hell just broke loose. They left Schwellenbach out there to start the eighth. He gave up a double and got pulled instantly for Joe Jimenez, who simply did not have it today. Gives up a double to Alvarez and two singles to Starling Marte and Francisco Lindor. And all of a sudden, it's 3-2 with nobody out. Jimenez yanked. In comes the closer, Raisel Iglesias. Up comes Jose Iglesias. No relation, as far as I know. Bang. Another single. Tie game. Mark Vientos, sack fly, Mets lead 4-3, runner on base, and up comes Brandon Nimmo, who demolishes a baseball into the right field seats and gives the Mets a 6-3 lead. Unbelievable shot from Nimmo. Longest walk around the bases of his career. He totally deserved it. That was a huge hit in a huge spot, so congratulations to him. I'd say without a doubt the biggest hit of his career to date, maybe ever. Who knows? But totally awesome moment there for Brandon Nimmo. In the bottom of the eighth, though, the Braves weren't done. They got two singles, a walk, and a hit by pitch, led to Ozzie Albies coming back up after his two-run home run earlier in the game with the bases loaded, and he cleared them with a double off the wall to give the Braves a 7-6 lead and send the country and many, many people overseas into absolute pandemonium. I mean, this for me was the moment when I knew we were watching an all-time game. Like, no matter how the game concluded, I mean, this was going to be one that at least one fan base is going to be talking about for years to come, regardless of what happens next. You know, Mets fans absolutely distraught when that hit came to pass. They thought they Mets'd it. They did it again. When will it end? But no. Francisco Lindor comes up with a man on base in the top of the ninth
inning.
Maybe
Metsing it means something different now.
Maybe it does, because he deposited one into the bullpen to give the Mets the lead, which they would not give up. Edwin Diaz locked it up in the bottom of the ninth, and the Mets won the game 8-7, clinching a playoff spot and forcing the Braves to have to win the game two just a couple hours later. And then we got to talk as well about the fact that Chris Sale got scratched. He was scheduled to pitch that game. I guess maybe we don't, but yeah.
Well, no, that's not what I was going to say. I was just going to say, look, I mean, the guy doesn't like the throwback uniforms. Why would you want him in the game? He was back there punching walls and cutting up uniforms. You can't let him start. I'm sorry. That's just not good.
Yeah, just a really weird timeline of expecting Sale to pitch. And then, you know, as soon as it seemed like they found out they actually needed him to pitch, he announced he wasn't able to, or
he's
at
gone.
Least the team did. You know, that might not be entirely on him with that timeline there, but at least it's how it was announced to the general public, was, you know, an hour before this game that's all of a sudden a must win, do or die, and we're starting Grant Holmes. But Grant
now,
Holmes absolutely shoved
Snitker. He did. Grant Holmes put out a great performance. Do you think that Snitker was thinking to himself that the Mets win game one, they're probably not going to throw out a great, you know, great lineup in game two. They're not going to be trying as hard, which means that we don't necessarily need Chris Sale, and maybe we can save him for game one of the wild card series.
That's could have been a thought, but they did just say that they don't expect to have him for the wild card series.
Oh,
the
I didn't see that yet. Are
yeah.
you serious?
Yeah, he's going to be out. So that does add another layer of, like, you know, when they announced he was quote unquote day to day, I mean, that kind of pissed a lot of people off, because it's like, wait a minute, if you're just a little bit hurt, I mean, man, you got to be out there. You're our ace. But the fact that they're already saying he's not going to be available for the next three games leads me to believe that, you know, maybe his back injury is a little bit more severe than we were expecting.
Well,
but, you know,
my condolences unto Braves fans. That's really unfortunate.
It's brutal.
There was a part of me that really just thought it was today and they were trying to pull some something. I guess it really, you know, you'd have to have some really, you know, some serious balls to try to pull that off if you're Brian Snicker. However, baseball's a weird game. You never know.
It sure is.
But that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sale had been healthy all year. Of course, that was the predominant question surrounding his 2024 season. You know, it would have been
probably
the best possible.
Winner, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's still going to win it. I mean, it had seemed like, you know, the best possible outcome for him this year, but the injury bug does now come back to bite him, maybe at the worst possible time. I mean, you know, we'll see if the Braves can win this series. Maybe he'd be available again down the road. But really brutal, brutal timing for this Chris Sale injury. But like I said, they turned to Grant Holmes, who turned in an excellent performance. He struck out 7 over 4 scoreless innings, and the Braves actually shut out the Mets in a pretty straightforward game that meant everything to one team and absolutely nothing to the other. And that's what had to suck about today if you're an Arizona Diamondbacks fan, is you just knew no matter what, you would have to rely on a winning team's backups beating a fringe playoff team's starters who would be fully locked in. And that's just a really shitty situation to be in. So I do feel for them. This was a particularly brutal day in Arizona. So my condolences to the fans of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Maybe you'll be back in the World Series next year. The playoff bracket is now set. We're going to discuss the wild card matchups and what we think might happen in the next few days. Before we get into all that, this is the Mudville Podcast, and I am one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I'm your other host, Brody Staub.
You know, Brody, before we get into this playoff preview, I really want to talk about what happened this weekend in Oakland and give what might be my last thoughts on the John Fisher saga.
This was quite a sight, but yeah, kick it off. Go ahead.
I saw a tweet last week, totally unrelated thing, but it said, "This might be the coolest sports photo of all time." And it was like an overhead of a packed college football stadium with a war plane or a B-52 or some shit flying over it, like they do here in America for some reason. And it's like this grand patriotic thing somehow, I guess, or at least a lot of people see it that way. A lot of other people were making fun of the tweet because, you know, there were no sports actually being played in the photo. You know, it's just an aesthetic. You know, the sporting in that is entirely so assumed. The point being, I think it's so easy for some people to lose sight of what sports are actually about, you know, what the core of sporting events is. Sports are about witnessing the greatest athletes in the world do what they do on a professional level.
It's humanity.
It is.
Like, it's the best that we can do as humans on a physical level. And that, like, that sounds so reductive and simple, but it's true.
It's mortality and immortality all at once, you know? It's about stories and watching a player go from one team to another and find success, or a veteran, like, finally winning their first championship. It's about the whole world coming together just this past weekend, even, to watch Ryan Williams catch the craziest touchdown we've ever seen and say, "Oh my God, did you just see that?" and celebrate an incredible achievement for this athlete and this exciting moment that we all shared together and will remember fondly forever. That's what sports are about. Major League Baseball has an antitrust exemption that says they're the only ones who can provide professional baseball to the country's mass entertainment. And Major League Baseball is made up of 30 privately owned teams run by ownership groups and executives making business financial decisions like they would in any other, you know, suit desk job. But crucially, there's a relationship between fans and a team, a city and their team, that is inherent to the fabric of the sport. And fans give sports teams so much more than they should. They buy tickets, they buy jerseys,
<That's true. laughs>
they establish relationships with players, and ideally have a great experience watching games at the ballpark or on television. And the team is a business, so the worst owners in baseball will say, technically we have no obligation to the fans and we're in it to make money. It is a good business decision to establish that relationship with a city and with its fans, so good organizations will sign franchise players to long-term contracts. They'll hire smart front office staff who will pinpoint the best players available and manage the many rough patches that just come with running a big league team, but good organizations find a way to win anyway. Unfortunately, baseball teams are privately owned, so an entire organization can be dependent on the financial and, in some cases, personal commitment of the owner. And if that's not there, the whole thing just comes crumbling down. It's why Pittsburgh hasn't been competitive for over a decade and just screwed two of their players out of $250,000 contract incentives, three plate appearances short of hitting their target. Players and agents know shit when they smell it. Ultimately, the losers are baseball fans in Pittsburgh and in some of these other cities in which the owners don't commit, who have to watch a decade plus of shit. Even the owners who aren't investing as much money in the team should be able to understand keeping up the appearance of the team's commitment to their players and their fans is very important. It doesn't work unless the fans think that the people running the show know what they're doing and are committed to winning. That's the entire nature of fanhood. And John Fisher destroyed that facade with a sledgehammer. And they put out a statement basically to the effect of, sorry, Oakland, we tried. And they got a collective shove it up your ass from the whole world. It's nice to, you know, see that. But what's so frustrating is that every part of this maddening process in which several people in positions of power did absolutely nothing to stop one of the least committed owners in baseball from moving a team that had been in Oakland for 60 years so that he personally can make a few more millions, while the tens of thousands of people who have committed themselves to watching athletics games over the years, buying tickets, buying concessions, buying jerseys, merchandise, supporting the team in any way they could, are left with no team at all. And to have the commissioner of baseball say, well, they can go across the bridge and watch the Giants, is unacceptable and weak. And everybody
bent. Did he say that?
Yeah, he said that, I think, at the start of last season. He said Oakland fans are upset they can go watch San Francisco. Everybody bent over backwards for this billionaire hell-bent on one of the most disgraceful relocations in sports history. And that's not a low bar, by the way. That complicity is just completely maddening. The fact that no one made any effort or stood up for these people in the slightest is so sad in so many ways. And it just feels like day after day, it's one thing after another where rich people have effectively neutered any governmental or legislative oversight that could stop them from doing whatever the fuck they want. And now they're just dabbing on everybody else. Watching those Oakland fans, 40,000 of them, fill that stadium and cheer their team on, roar as they made the last out to win that game. Announcers who have followed this team for their whole lives, shedding tears on their last show ever, live on the air. I mean, it broke my heart, and it broke the hearts of thousands of people who watched it all across the country, and it's just unbelievably frustrating that there's nothing we can do when we know that this is so wrong, this should not be allowed to happen, and yet everybody responsible for stopping it just completely caved. And it was a really moving thing to see all those people show up and say, we're here, don't tell us we're not, and don't tell us you tried. And I don't know what those people in Oakland are going to do. Maybe some of them stay athletics fans. I know I wouldn't, but statistically speaking, a few of them will. Some others will go across the bridge and watch the Giants. Others will just stop watching baseball altogether. And I find that incredibly sad that these are people who wanted to watch, wanted to root for their team, and a bunch of money-hungry billionaires said, nope, sorry. You don't get to watch a team anymore.
Baseball should have stepped in because they constantly talk about protecting the product. And I hate calling baseball a product or a commodity, but at the end of the day, to these people, that's what it is. They should have stepped in because now you have an entire city who they lose out on. I mean, like, it's, I get that in a world like this, you're never going to get a business to do the right thing just because, you know, it's the right thing to do, as sad as it is to understand that on a deep level, but that is the reality that we live in. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's not just going to be, you know, the feel good story at the end of the day that wins out. But I mean, it's hard to believe that Las Vegas building a giant multi-billion dollar stadium and attracting mostly maybe tourists, and I don't know how many games they would actually sell out on maybe like a Friday or a Saturday game. I have a hard time that that is more financially sound than keeping the team with a dedicated fan base, actually having an owner who injects, you know, money into the team the way that they should if they want to run a baseball team. Like, this is your product that you are supposed to be taking care of. I just, you know, like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, there's a belief that it's always cheaper to keep customers that you have than to go out and find new ones. How is it that building a brand new stadium and getting new fans, it's sad and stupid.
It says to the rest of the league that your team's owner, no matter who you are, has no obligation to keep baseball around and alive in your city. And at the drop of a hat, especially if you're a small market team, you could be next. And frankly, I wouldn't blame anybody who said, okay, I won't spend any more of my time or my money on this team. Obviously, many, many people are far too invested to ever do something like that. So
right.
What are those people supposed to do? You know, what is that city now of Oakland supposed to do? The city that has lost three teams now in a span of what? 5 years. I mean, and yep. it goes for everybody who
I think
the team.
It's ridiculous. It's always been ridiculous when franchises move for greed. And it's just like, because sports, again, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. They're also community, you know, the human aspect of it gets lost. And that's, you know, it's sad that it's a thing that ties an entire city together. And now they have nothing left. And it really hurts a city's identity. I have a lot of family in Buffalo. And let me tell you, if they didn't have the Bills, holy crap, that city would be like, first of all, they'd be devastated if the Bills ever left. But like, I don't even know what culturally what that city would be if they didn't have the Bills. Like, the Bills are everything to their identity. It is just, it's a shame that a few rich people can see their line go up and they move. You know, like, it's just whatever. It's frustrating. We've beaten this to death. And not just this, I mean, like, the whole thing. Like, it's just tiring.
Forget the fact that they don't even know where they're going to play for the next 3 years. And if they do get into Sacramento, it'll be so hot that it'll be a safety hazard for the players, just like it'll be in Las Vegas. And that the stadium in Las Vegas is nowhere close to being built, and I believe is still based on a heavily flawed construction plan.
Everybody knows that construction always ends up being quicker than originally planned. So
oh, of course. If you're Major League Baseball, you have to understand what your role is as an organization that provides people with sports and entertainment that they devote thousands of their lives to, and you have to step in and tell this greedy asshole billionaire no, because I don't know who the Las Vegas A's are for. 3 months into their existence, I bet they're selling just as few tickets as they did in Oakland, because John Fisher's not going to go out and magically start investing in players now that he's in a different city. He hasn't signed a $100 million contract once in his 20 years running the Oakland A's. Maybe he'll open the checkbook once or twice at the very beginning to try and draw some fans into the new team in Las Vegas, if they even get there. But it'll be the exact same tenure Oakland's had to deal with for two decades, and it'll fucking suck. I don't know who would sign with them as a player after this clown show. I feel sorry for anybody who gets drafted to this team to play for this owner in 115 degree temperatures. It's just truly a disaster for the game of baseball, and it's one that is just entirely preventable and devastating, and those two things simultaneously is just infuriating and an absolute disaster. So I guess that's the end of my thoughts on Oakland. Farewell. Maybe you get an expansion
the Oakland
team,
A's,
and hopefully with a better owner, or with no owner at all. How nice would that be?
Farewell to the, yeah, that'd be sweet. Shout out to the Green Bay Packers, also a green and gold team. It is possible. Shout out to the best color scheme and best uniforms in baseball.
Anyway, let's move on to the teams.
And uniforms
are
a big deal. We'll get into that later on the All-Star stuff. But anyway, go on. Sorry.
Anyway, let's move on to the teams that are alive, that are in the playoffs, officially clinched. The bracket is set. October baseball is here, and I am so excited. Brody, how are you feeling about this bracket, about this field? Who are you excited to watch, both players and just teams? Because we've got
quite a few
guys that just aren't usually here, and I'm very excited to watch them. But I want to hear from you first.
So, yeah, of course. So I finished my bracket up a little bit ago. And as I was going through it, I just kept getting excited about all the matchups that I was, you know, predicting were going to happen and that I can't wait to watch if they do end up happening. I'm very excited about the Royals and the Tigers personally. Like the American League right now, like not the wild card round or the American League wild card round side. I'm very excited about the NL wild card. We can discuss in a minute. But I cannot wait to watch this Tigers Astros series because it is like two different complete opposite worlds of what's going on there, with the Tigers being this young upstart team and the Astros being like the tired dynasty. Like, it's just, it's so like, oh, it's so good. It's so much drama. I'm very excited. You have the Cy Young winner and Tarek Skubal, Justin Verlander, and like all these, like, you know, kid who threw the first no hitter this season, Renel Blanco. Like, it's just like, there's so many names on both sides. That'll be fun. You have these young studs in the outfield on the Tigers. Like, you have Riley Green, you get Parker Meadows, who's been playing a great outfield. Like, you know, all these kids, you get Colt Keith as a rookie. Like, you know, you get Torque, you get, you get AJ Hinch, by the way, going up against his old team. Like, there are just storylines on storylines in this Tigers-Astros series. I'm so excited. Do you want to do predictions for each one as I go through them, or like, how do you want to do that?
Yeah, let's discuss these one at a time. And I think we can start with Detroit. Yeah, let's do Detroit and Houston, because that I think is an incredibly interesting matchup. It is experience versus youth inexperience. I mean, I don't know exactly how to put it, but I think there are two ways of looking at this matchup. I mean, one is
I think youth.
Yeah, no, I agree.
We get Skubal against Framber.
Yes, I'm so excited for that. So excited. Lefty aces dueling. I mean, what's better than that? I think there are two different ways to look at this series. One is a little bit more cynical than the other. I'll start with that one. You could say, of course, Houston draws the best possible matchup on paper and plays a team that sold at the deadline 2 months ago. They're going to steamroll Detroit, and it's not going to be fun, and they're going to win both games, and there won't be a game three, and the Astros are going to win forever, and we're all going to die. The other way of looking at it is a red-hot Detroit team comes into Houston with confidence, momentum, and faces an Astros pitching rotation that is not nearly as daunting as it has been in past years, you know? Hunter Brown is good, but if one thing is off for him, he becomes one of the worst pitchers in the league. You know, we remember some of those starts he had in April and May. So if he's on, he's on, but he's not always on, and there's not a lot of middle ground there. So, like, I think Hunter Brown is a very, very good pitcher. I wouldn't be surprised to watch him go 7 shutout innings tomorrow, but the risk of a blow-up start with him is always there. Framber, I think that's not so much the case. You know, you're basically guaranteed like 5-6 innings, 2-3 runs max with Framber. Like, he's gonna get you that every single time. So I wouldn't be surprised if tomorrow's matchup especially is very low scoring, with the AL Cy Young Tarek Skubal on the mound for the Tigers. That game is going to be lots of fun. But then game two, we're looking at Hunter Brown, who I just talked about a little bit, against Reese Olson.
Yeah, Reese Olson. I love
That's
Reese
Olson. That's interesting. What do you love about Reese Olson?
I'm a very big fan. So he, every time I've watched a Reese Olson start, he looks confident to me, and I feel like he has a lot of command, and I'm interested to see how he performs in the playoffs. He seems like a guy who's going to be a better known name in the near future. I don't know if he's there yet, but he's impressed me in his starts that I've seen. So this season, in 22 starts, pitched to a 3.53 ERA with a 1.1 whip, close to a 1.2. This is his second full season. Last season, he started 18 games. This season was 22. He's 24 years old. I'm excited to see what he does. He seems confident to me. He seems like a guy who's going to be fearless on the mound. And that is, you know, of course, what you need in the playoffs. But the problem with this Tigers team is that they don't have any experience. So we'll see that's like the first place that you can hit them. I think that the Tigers end up losing this game. I do have the Astros in three in this series. I think they win Skubal Day, and then I think they end up losing this game, and they lose game three, probably with Justin Verlander on the mound for Houston. I'm excited to watch this series, but I do have the Astros in three games.
I'm with you there. I don't even know if I'm going to give Detroit a win. Like, I love Skubal, but
I think they win Skubal Day. Like, coming out, shot out of a cannon for game one.
No, yeah. I think he's going to shoot out of a cannon, too. Just something about Framber Valdez against that line up in the playoffs. I think it's a day game. Are they playing at 2:30? Yes, they're playing at 2:30 tomorrow. That screams great. To me like six innings, 72 pitches, like one run for Fromber. And like I could see Skubal having one bad inning. And I don't know. Like I think he's going to pitch very well tomorrow. He's going to strike a lot of hitters out. But I would not be surprised at all if the Astros won that game. And if they do, I don't see them losing game two. I mean, it's just
fair.
Such an experienced team. I agree with you, though. I've got Houston taking that. If it does go to game three, do you think the matchup would be Justin Verlander against Casey Mize?
Casey Mize is probably where you go, right? What are your other options? I mean, that's kind of, you know, this whole season... You're not going Kenta Maeda. I think you have to you have to go Casey Mize. I think that's kind of all you got.
Former number one pick. It'd be his time to shine.
You could go Bo Brisky.
You could. No, he's out of the pen now. He's too good out of the pen. You can't start him, I don't think. Unless you're going to do a pen game.
You throw him as an open. Okay. And then, you try to do that. But there's, you know, I don't think there's a good option there. I guess you go Casey Mize and hope for the best.
Brant Herder, maybe? Who knows?
I mean, Kiter Montero make the playoff roster? Like,
See that being the game three plan. Some combination of Brisky, Kiter Montero, Brant Herder. Like, how funny would that be if that was what knocked out the Astros?
You know what? If you dial them all up for three innings, I actually don't hate that.
You can actually kind of like it a lot.
They
should maybe do that.
Yeah, but, I don't know. We'll see. You'd have to really put a lot of trust in some young, unproven arms. But this lineup is interesting too. I like their speed game. I like their youth. It's just, you know, it's tough when you have a team that is so experienced in the playoffs and knows how to win, and all of this same old, you know, tropes that we know about the Astros and all these dynasties who know how to win, like the Chiefs and the Warriors and like teams that know how to win. It's hard to beat them once it counts, and this is their first test after a long stretch. And also another thing with the Tigers and being youthful, when you go on a run like this, it can be very exhausting and you feel like you've crossed the finish line. So we'll see if they feel like they have more to prove.
Dude, what if Spencer Torkelson homers off of Framber Valdez tomorrow into the Crawford boxes?
Electric. I don't know if that would happen, but that would be electric.
It could happen.
Lefties?
He's been good. He's been on a run lately. I don't know. I could see it.
The splits. Hold on. Versus lefties, we've got a 235 average with four homers in 48 games, 89 plate appearances.
Not great, but
15 strikeouts to 7 walks, 292 on base, 798 OPS.
He could get a hold of one. I could see it happening. It'd be nice.
All right. Well, the playoffs are a different animal, you know.
Absolutely. Dude, playoff torque, how sick would that be? Again, speaking of playoff number torque. One overall picks. I mean, Casey Mize and torque. They
apply some
guys.
Torque.
Yeah, give him some torque. You got anything else to say about Tigers Astros, or do you want to move on?
I think we see some good defense in this series. Like, we get at least one crazy, like, either a robbed homer or, like, a crash into the wall or something from either, like, Riley Green or Parker Meadows.
Moving on. Baltimore Orioles versus the Kansas City Royals to face the New York Yankees. We have a rematch of the 2014 ALCS. How exciting is
that? Crazy. And we all know how that went.
We do.
That was Buck leaving Zach Britton in, and then the
No. That you're thinking of the 2016 wild card game where Britton was healthy against the Blue Jays, and they put in Ubaldo. The reason I remember that is we watched it from our lounge at college, and I couldn't.
We
done
did,
that
but that was that was 2016. You're right.
2014 was the Orioles against Kansas City in the ALCS, and I believe it was a sweep. Kansas City won it in max five game. Yeah, it was a decade ago, but I remember it well. Because I thought that the O's were going to take it that year, and they didn't.
Wade Davis, back-to-back wins. Darren O'Day, back-to-back losses. Brutal. Greg Holland, back-to-back saves. Saves. Greg Holland saved all four games of this series.
Greg Holland is a name that you don't hear enough about anymore. Let's get him on the pod. Greg Holland.
Yeah, what's Dutchie up to?
See what he's up to. I just want to know.
We'll tap him in. We'll see what's going on.
This feels like a series the Orioles should win, I think. Like, I do think that they are the better team on paper by a decent margin.
Yep.
KC being another team, though, that surprised a lot of people this year. And
absolutely.
The Orioles having been a lot of people's division favorites, including all three of us, by the way, in our season preview, we all picked the Orioles to win the AL East. A lot of their young guys looked like they were not ready at the plate in last year's playoffs. The whole team really looked bad about this time last year. The Rangers came in, their lineup mashed their pitching, and the O's were out of there pretty fast. This year, it'll come down to those same young guys who really struggled last year, you know, namely the Stars, Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman. But also, the rookies might have to participate with Colton Cowser, Jackson Holliday. I mean, who knows if Heston Kerstad even makes the roster. But like, these players will not only have to provide a spark for the O's, they'll likely have to be the ones carrying the offense to victory. Like a Corbin Burnes, Grayson Rodriguez, Kyle Bradish, Zach Eflin rotation would be sick. But injuries happen, and two of those guys are out. So you're going to have to deal with Burnes. Zach Eflin was a great acquisition. He's going to start game two. But game three, I mean...
go Dean Kramer?
I think you
probably
go
Dean Kramer.
Oh, you might go to Kramer, but you might go to Albert Suarez?
I think you go Dean Kramer. I was just watching an interview the other day with Brandon Hyde, and he was talking about how much they love Dean Kramer in a big spot for some reason.
Okay.
So I feel like I could see them going Dean Kramer.
They need some
so
creamer.
Be prepared for that mentally if you're an Orioles fan. You will be seeing big game Dean.
You will be getting cream.
Once again. Pitching is the key in the playoffs, I think. Experience and pitching. And if you have neither, I lean on pitching. So I have the Royals in three games because I think that you get Lugo, you get Reagans, and probably, I have to think about it, who would you get for
It'd
game
be
three?
Michael Wacha.
Probably Michael Wacha, sure. Wacha. Okay.
I think that rotation is great.
That's a really tough 1-2-3. And also they have a way, way, way better bullpen. Like, way better. Like, they have a good bullpen. The Orioles don't have one. And the Royals rotation is better. The Orioles have a better lineup, but the Royals are really fast. And they can steal. And they also have the runner-up for the MVP. But this is going to be fun. We get Gunnar and Bobby going head-to-head. That's going to be really good. A lot of good storylines in this one. Two young teams with a lot to prove. Royals want to prove that this isn't a fluke. Orioles want to prove after last year's first-round exit that was a fluke. Salvi Perez is trying to do something here. And you get Seth Lugo, who had a great season, who probably wants to put a little pin in that and say, hey, you know, this also not a fluke, you know? There's a lot on the line here. So, going to be a really fun series. I do have the Royals in three games just because of the pitching.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be excited about with both of these teams. Like, really, no matter who advances, like, there's going to be a lot to talk about. I mean, of course, the Orioles as a division rival of the Yankees would be an electric ALDS, but also what a platform for those young guys to shine. Like, that's where they would have their like signature Oriole moment, would be in a series like that. But also, I mean, it would do so much for the team's confidence, reputation, psyche, I assume, you know, if they came out hot out of the gates and they hit well in this postseason after getting blanked so hard last year. I think that has to have been stuck in their mind all this year, you know. The Royals, I mean, are setting such a perfect example for small market teams who, I mean, the Royals were terrible last year. We talked
they
about
won
them
60
on
games.
They
were worse than the A's.
I predicted like, them to be horrible this year. I had projected them to win fewer games than the White Sox. Like, we talked about. No, I was that could've. That was stupid, but in hindsight, that was dumb. But we talked about Lugo and Michael Wacha as like speculative free agent flyers, basically. Like, what are they going to get out of these guys? How many innings? And talk about best case scenario. Like, these guys look like legitimate playoff arms going into your rotation, like where you're excited to watch them pitch against one of the better lineups in baseball. And Cole Reagans, like, they got him last year in the Aroldis Chapman trade. Like, he looked elite. It's the same thing with Tarik Skubal. Like, both of these guys looked like the two best lefties in the American League last year, but they didn't have the innings, and we wanted to see a full season out of both of them. They both did it. Like, those are two guys that I'm so excited to watch in the playoffs because they really proved themselves this year, and they had their breakouts. Reagans, Lugo, Wacha. I mean, if I'm a team that struggled last year in postseason and I'm facing down those three guys, I'm not thrilled about it. As much as I want to go with the Orioles, I think I'm going to take KC as well. I think it comes down to game three, and then I think Wacha can give you six innings, and ultimately I don't know that the Orioles have a third healthy starter. If they had Grayson or Kyle Bradish, I think I would give them the edge here. But ultimately, maybe, you know, Bobby Witt comes up big in that game three. By the way, one more thing about this series. What do we think this means for the future of the AL shortstop crown with Gunnar versus Bobby?
I brought that up earlier. That is probably the most exciting storyline going into this. Look, baseball, you can't say it's like one. This isn't basketball, right? This isn't like whoever wins a series is going to have that to lean on until they face each other again in the playoffs. So easy little bragging rights there if you're a fan of the Royals and the Royals win. Anybody tries to tell you about Gunnar Henderson, pretty simple to just say who came in second in the MVP last year and you know, who won in the playoffs. Oh, yeah, second in the MVP. We beat you at home three games in the world in the wild card round. You know, it's going to be fun, man. This is a fun series. There's a lot at play here. And I also just touched on something that I think is we have not touched on, which is very important. You don't travel in the wild card round. So these are three games in Baltimore. I'm not changing my pick based on that. But that is something to keep in mind. I have Houston winning the other series, just to remind you, which they're going to be at home. And I've got Baltimore dropping three games here. Kansas City going on the road. That rotation is too good. I'm telling you, it's scary. I think, you know, Baltimore is definitely capable of winning this series, but I've got Kansas City going in there and taking it in three.
So we both have then in the ALDS, Yankees versus Royals and Astros
Houston and Cleveland.
Cleveland. Okay.
Yep.
I'm with
moving
that.
Into the National League wild
card. Let's go to the NL. The Braves versus the Padres to face the Dodgers. This is an interesting series. The Padres
especially
have been...
because it starts tomorrow.
I know, dude. I'm so excited.
Braves are flying to San Diego right now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. After this, today. What a day.
The Padres have been playing really good ball lately. They have three quality arms ready to go in this series on adequate rest. The Braves don't have Sale or their two best hitters in Acuña and Austin Riley, who are both out for the season. I'm very tempted to take San Diego here.
Yeah, I've got San Diego in two.
Michael King gave them exactly what they needed when they were trading Juan Soto for a package with him as the centerpiece. Trading Thorpe for Dylan Cease was great. That worked out so well for them. Joe Musgrove has been hot as of late. And, you know, Cease, who we just mentioned, like, he has some of the best stuff in the world. So that's your 1-2-3. Whereas we don't know anything about who the Braves are going to throw out there because they have Freed. Tomorrow would be on 3 days rest. I can't imagine they go with him. I would think they'd put him in game two against Musgrove. And then go with probably Charlie Morton in game three. But, like, I truly don't know who pitches for the Braves tomorrow. Like, there's a world in which we have game one starter Bryce Elder.
I think Bryce Elder's probably where you go, to
you
be
think
honest.
So?
I don't know where else you can go. Like, who else is starting that game? Did they say yet?
No,
I
haven't seen anything. If they did, I mean, it went by me. But I think it's got to be Elder. And, like, if that... I don't know, man. I'm going with the Padres.
Can it be Max Fried? When did he pitch?
It can be Max Fried. I think it won't
27th,
be, though.
So
like,
that's 4 days rest.
Maybe
I guess
then
it's not impossible. Except, he pitched 9 innings.
Oh, yeah, okay.
In his last start.
You should,
so
yeah.
He's, no.
I'm
so you're not
going to
throw
elder.
Max Fried.
Are respect you
gonna
throw your elders. No, because nope, he pitched today.
Pitched on the 28th.
He pitched today.
No, he pitched. Did he pitch today?
Yeah,
he
pitched
did
today.
Pitch today.
Yeah.
He did pitch today.
Okay, can't use
Jesus Christ, do you have to go Bryce Elder?
I think you I think honestly you might. Elder. Like, I don't know who else it could be. Like, they traded all their other depth arms to the White Sox.
They have no one left. I mean, unless you want to go bullpen day on day one and hope you get Chris Sale back, but I don't know.
Who
man,
would that even
tough.
Be,
and
though,
also,
because, like, you would go to Grant Holmes, who pitched today.
Well, like, I was going to say Grant Holmes, today. But you could also, I mean, Jesse Chavez?
Did they like, have him still? I think they traded
start?
Him.
No, he's there.
Is he back? Okay, he's back.
I think, yeah, he's around.
My bad.
He's been there. He hasn't pitched in a while, and he used to start a long time ago. What are your other options? You don't really have any. And again, as I said, I'm going pitching to make my predictions here, and the Braves do not. I think they're going to be exhausted. They have no pitching, and their hitters are all beat up. So,
I think if the Braves do win, it's going to come down to Matt Olson and Michael Harris, because these are two hitters who have been really hot over the past couple of weeks.
Jorge Soler is dangerous in the playoffs. Too,
yeah, that's very true. Harris is a guy, like, he was hurt for a lot of the year. I expected him to have a breakout season. I thought this was going to be the year that Harris vaulted himself into that, like, superstar tier.
Elite center fielder.
It didn't really happen. Yeah. A lot of it is he was hurt, but like he didn't make the plate adjustments that I hoped he would make. You know, he still kind of swings at everything, but he's been really hot over the past couple weeks.
Still young.
And they're facing three consecutive right-handed pitchers, so with these left-handed bats, I mean, if the Braves win this game, I think it's going to be through these guys. But
so
I'm go
speaking
with
the of the Padres pitching, because I'm very excited to talk about the Padres pitching really quick.
Okay.
Michael King, this year, 2.95 ERA, 3.3 FIP, 173 innings, 30 starts. He made 30 starts this year and pitched to a sub-3 ERA. This is a dude. Last year, before last season when the Yankees started him in 9 games at the end of the year, he had never pitched in more than 60 innings. He had 63 innings in 2021, all right? This year, he made 30 starts, and he pitched in almost 200 innings, and he pitched to a sub-3 ERA with 200 strikeouts. Like, he's a stud. Like, we knew he was when we were getting rid of him, and it was, you know, sad. That's why everyone was like, do Clark instead. Don't give up Michael King.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like ultimately just not something you can even think about rejecting.
And he was a swing man. He was a swing man for us, and we were like, hold on to him if you can. Like, give up this starter who showed something, and Clark Schmidt. No. No, give up the starter, hold on to the swing man, and Michael King, who's a stud. We knew he was a stud, and he has absolutely proven it given the opportunity. He's that good, and he's the second best pitcher on the team. So you have Dylan Cease, who's going to start. He had a great season. I mean, 224 strikeouts and 189 innings. Like, come on, man. Like, and then also, it's a question on where you go next, because you can go Joe Musgrove or Yu Darvish, and if you want to throw Matt Waldron and get a little funky, you can. Like, it's, you know, they are dangerous, and then the back end of their bullpen is very good. Like, they have a very strong bullpen to add on to a devastating lineup that is not that balanced, but they can really hurt you.
And I'm not
the
really
only
sure
place where they're weak
the Braves
is
do.
Defense. That's it. Like, you know.
Didn't mean to cut you off. I was going to say that I'm not sure that the Braves do have that elite bullpen. Like, especially if Joe Jimenez is doing what he did today. I mean, you know, maybe
they might
if
have
they
to
have,
pull someone to make a spot start, like, too, so that even gets narrower.
They
like,
converted Reynaldo Lopez into a starter this year. I mean, I could just see, like, maybe he throws like 3 innings out of the pen in one of these games. Like, maybe it's tomorrow even. Like, I know he pitched today, but like Bryce Elder, they get 4 innings out of him. He gives up 3 runs. You put in Reynaldo for 2, and you're through 5, and maybe you have a chance to win the game.
I mean, yeah, there's not much there. They're, as the Yankees always say, their lane, you know, or their pitching path right now, it looks bad. I don't really know where they go. I think I mentioned I have the Padres in 2 sweeping this series.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if I have it in 2. I think I see the Braves maybe taking 1 game, possibly game 2. I think they might hit around Joe Musgrove, but like if game 3 is Grandpa Charlie Morton versus Dylan Cease, I'm going with the Padres.
Yeah, fair enough. Should we move on to the Mets?
Yeah.
Because that's also a fun one.
Yeah, that's the last one we've got. It is the Mets and the Brewers to play the Phillies. How fun would a Mets-Phillies series be? But
look,
let's
they're in dragon slaying mode right now. But
I mean,
they have to get there first.
I think maybe they'd be in more of a dragon slaying mode if they had tried to win game 2. That would have been an active, you know, real dragon slaying. But I don't fault them for, you know, kind of taking a fall in that one and saying see you tomorrow in the playoffs.
Well, it's actually better that they did that, because if you're them and you want to screw over the Braves, what's worse, ending their season today and like letting them stay home, or making them fly to San Diego and get whooped for 2 days straight and then have to fly home?
Fair enough.
It's and at the same time they got to screw over the Diamondbacks, so how fun is that? You know, I appreciate this Mets team. They're very fun. They're very entertaining. They're kind of lovable, which I'm not used to saying about a Mets team. They can hit, and they have a decent rotation who is going to be tired. I think you probably go David Peterson tomorrow. Is that right? Have they said yet, or is it Manaea?
No, it's going to be Severino. Okay. So they didn't start him, so he's going to go tomorrow, I believe.
Sure.
Severino versus Freddy Peralta. That'll be an interesting one.
That's a very fun matchup.
And then you have the two lefties, Manaea game two and Peterson game three.
Okay. Now say it with me, as I've been saying. What has been driving my predictions?
Pitching?
Pitching. I think the Brewers right now are lined up to win this series.
I don't think the Brewers have pitching, though.
I think their bullpen is better right now, and I think they are, I think their starters line up better. I think you get Freddy Peralta, and I think you probably go Tobias Myers in game two, maybe Savali, and then you end up with either
or
the
Colin
other one
Rea.
Or Colin Ray.
Yeah.
Or Colin Ray. And then you also have Frankie Montas to either come out of the pen or to start one of those games if you want him. And I'm pretty sure he had a pretty solid back half of the season. And then the back end of their bullpen is good. So I would be concerned if I was the Mets, because you're going to have to deal with some very good pitching. But I don't like them going to Milwaukee and having to win this series. I have the Milwaukee Brewers in two games.
I might push back on the pitching thing a little bit. Like, I like what the Brewers have in terms of, like, you have a couple guys who probably won't start, but they are starters and they have been starting for you, and they've been bulk relievers in the past, so you can probably count on them for, like, 2-3 innings in one of these games. Like, go to Colin Ray. I mean, I agree with you. I think Tobias Myers has earned his own start, and he probably starts game two. If you don't have a guy that you're confident with pitching like a long time,
I also want to take a victory lap on him, by the way, because I said how excited I was about Tobias Myers after his second career start.
Fair enough.
And you pushed back on me.
Fair enough.
I was like, no, the guy's got good stuff.
I think we're hearing the name Freddy Peralta and assuming he's an ace, and that has not been the case. He hasn't been that impressive over the past few months. He's had a lot of control issues. He hasn't been hitting his electric fastball. It's been like the velo has been more like 95, 96 than like 97, so he hasn't been in the past. With a guy like him, that means a lot. And I mean, the fact that he hasn't been pitching too well lately and that the Mets have been hitting, like, they have a pretty deep lineup. Like, it's not like they don't have the superstar. I mean, I guess they do with, I guess you can consider Lindor a superstar now. I think he has earned that title certainly today if he hadn't already. They have a like pesky lineup, and with Peralta's control issues, I think a guy like Brandon Nimmo could easily draw a couple walks and then, you know, get on base for
couple
a
runs
guy that
like,
could
that
like
doesn't walk
like manufacture, you know. But yeah, you're right. So I don't know.
Freddy
Peralta,
last playoff start, by the way, did not go very well.
Yeah.
5 innings pitched, but he gave up 4 runs to the D-backs last season, the wild card game.
As for the Mets, it's weird because like at the start of the season, I completely wrote this team off because I thought they had no pitching whatsoever. I like looked at this rotation. I was like Severino, Sean Manaea, Jose Quintana. I think they had Adrian Hauser in there at the time. I was like, what are we doing here? And I was like, you know, maybe one of those guys is going to be good for you and is going to provide like a full veteran season of quality pitching. I didn't think it'd be all three of them. Like, I really didn't. Severino has been very good. Sean Manaea has had some lights out starts for the Mets. Like, when he is on his game, he is very tough to hit. And David Peterson, like, is confusing because the stats say he's been pitching above his head for a lot of the season. Like, his numbers should be worse than they are. On one hand, should have, would have, could have. And he's a good pitcher. I think he's able to hammer
something
that
about
high fastball.
He's like a survivor. Like, he just, he's a scrapper.
But it's weird because like for a while he would only have like 4 strikeouts in a game, and then he's had a couple starts recently where he's gotten like 10. So
yeah.
They changed something with him. Maybe I think it's the fastball placement. So I don't know if he can hit his spots. I think the Mets have a good chance there, but like, because then, you know, he's a very good pitcher. You know what? I'm going to do something surprising, and I'm going to take the Mets in this series in 3.
Interesting.
I think that the Brewers don't have the pitching for it, and I think that the Mets are driven to win and go face Philly. But
I don't know, man. You got a lot of guys back there who can. They have like 7 pitchers with registered saves this season. Like they've like they're in a good spot. I think I don't hate it because it's interesting, and I'm glad that we.
And I want to do one pick where we don't have the same as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that's fun. I don't know, man. They've got good lefties out of the pen. They've got really good back end stuff. They've got like strikeouts. They don't walk anybody. They got good starting, and they have a very good lineup. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know.
And good defense. They're very good on defense.
If you took the Mets, I probably would have taken the Brewers, but like, I don't know. I'm going to go with a fun one for this one. Yeah, I'm going to go with Mets Phillies in the NLDS and Dodgers versus Padres. So two division rivals. That would be so much fun. I would love to see that. Do we want to give our World Series picks?
Yeah. I think we should do our World Series picks because right now, going into the Wild Card Series, it's the most wide open, and there have been a lot of pundits, baseball pundits, who've called this the most wide open playoffs that they've ever seen, such as Tim Kirchen, who's one of the, you know, preeminent baseball minds that there is. He called this like the most open playoffs that he can remember. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
I can go first. I don't mind. I'm kind of doing this off the cuff. You know, I didn't put like too much into this, partially because baseball is so unpredictable, but also just that, you know, sometimes it's all about who you look at and you just have a good feeling about. Out of the American League, I think that, you know, if our prediction comes true, it would be Yankees versus Royals. I would take the Yankees there. I remember this. The Yankees have beat up on Kansas City, I think, all year, at least most of the times they've played. They don't hit lefties very well, so I'd be pretty concerned about how they would fare against Cole Reagans. But, I mean, ultimately, you know, Juan Soto and Aaron Judge, along with Jazz Chisholm, Giancarlo Stanton, and company, is a very daunting task, and with many more years of experience behind them than the Orioles have. So if it is Yankees-Royals, yeah, I like the Yankees to go to the ALCS. And then the other one would be Houston versus Cleveland. And I know what I'm setting myself up for here, but I just don't see Cleveland's pitching playing in the playoffs or being able to skate by as much. I mean, we know what they like to do with all of their like contact guys. They had best case scenario seasons out of all three of Jose Ramirez, Josh Naylor, and Stephen Kwan. I think that is largely the reason that they won 92 games. So if those three guys all hit in the postseason, like that's how they're going to win. But the Astros pitching has been very, very good of getting teams' superstar hitters out in the playoffs. And it's happened against the Yankees. It's happened against other teams. I mean, we've seen it from them just in the past. Like, they are able to shut down your best hitters in the playoffs. And I think I'm going to take Houston, and then I think it would be a Yankees versus Astros ALCS, which is a bit of a nightmare to imagine. But I think that this team is very, very different than the teams in the past, both the Astros and the Yankees. You know, Juan Soto alone swings that so much. And I think this is the year that the Yankees maybe get over the hump. Maybe it's also the year that the Bills finally beat the Chiefs. Maybe we're exercising all our demons.
Oh, dear God. Did the Knicks beat the Celtics?
maybe not. Who knows? We'll see. I don't know how they're going to be with Cat yet. We got to see that. I'm going to be a bit of a homer here, and I'm going to take the Yankees out of the AL. And for the National League,
can I run through my AL really quick as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Move on. All right. This is unfortunate because I got the Yankees as well, but let's get there. All right. So I've got the Yankees as well. I've got the Yankees and the Royals meeting up. The Yankees, I have them taking that in three. They have beaten up the Royals all season, as you said. We've just seen the Yankees have a better roster, and I do think their pitching lines up very well for a short playoff series and a long one, but we'll get there. As far as the Guardians and the Astros, I have the Guardians in four games with the home field advantage. As you said, I don't think this is the Houston team that we've seen. Again, so easy to doubt these teams when they have not showed you exactly who they have been. I'm reminded of the Chiefs last season.
Oh, God, yeah.
Really rough regular season.
Didn't have any receivers, and they won the Super Bowl.
They had no one, and somehow they just turned it on when they had to, and they motored through everybody.
If anyone does that here, it'll be Houston. Their way. I know it's a different sport, so it's a nonsensical comparison, but you know what I mean by the vibes.
It's not, though. They're winners. That's like what winners do.
Yeah, it's winning culture, I suppose.
It's frustrating. That being said, I do think that it's the same thing. I honestly do think either the Bills or the Ravens go to the Super Bowl this year for the same reason. It has to break at some point, and I think it breaks this season. They just seem tired. And they also have Joe Espada, who's a new manager, and I believe in Stephen Vogt, who's a first-year manager also, I know. But I think Stephen Vogt is a very good manager. He's going to win Manager of the Year probably. And at least in the AL, I think we'll get to the NL in a second, but I do think that their bullpen is that good. Their pitching is that good. I don't think that this lineup is as fluky as it seems. Granted, they are top heavy, but they are fast, they are crafty, and they have a very good bullpen, and they have home field advantage. And I think that they get through Houston. I have them winning in 4 games. You also have to remember that they are going to not be coming off of a wild card series, which Houston is, which can be tiring. Now, again, this is something that we have not touched on, but we really should have. The teams with buys in the last couple of years have historically not done very well. I don't think that that will continue this season, which is why I have the Yankees and the Guardians moving on.
I love that because I think people have made so much out of that, like, you know, 3 days off is to, I think that's nonsense. I think it has blown so far out of proportion. You know, maybe it has a little bit of an effect, but ultimately there's been a lot of excuse making, and maybe that'll come back to bite me. Maybe I'll say that, I'd be saying about that about the Yankees in a week. But if the Yankees lose, I'll be saying much more angry things than that.
exactly. There will be other fish to fry at that point.
Yeah.
Then I have the Guardians and the Yankees meeting up in the ALCS. That's a little homery, but I also, as to everything that you talked about with the Yankees, my dad was questioning me about this the other night because he was like, you know, you claim to know a lot about baseball, you being me. Are you being biased, or do you think the Yankees actually have a good chance to win the World Series? And I was like, absolutely. Like, they are truly one of the best teams in baseball, top 2 or 3, no matter how you slice it. Their offense is that good when they're all on. Their pitching is very good, and their bullpen seems to have picked it up. Like, they are hungry as hell. Like, you cannot undersell that. It's why I'm kind of thinking that the Royals win this series in Baltimore. Like, it's why I think that the Tigers will push this series to 3, but ultimately lose in Houston. It's why I think the Padres end up just, like, steamrolling through the Braves. Like, all these teams with this much to prove, and the Yankees have so much to prove. I think that the Yankees finally push through this season. They make it to the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, it really is right there in front of them this year. Like, I truly believe that they are the best team left in the play. No, I'm not, it's true, though. It's true.
That's why he says it all the time. It's true.
I didn't predict them to win last year because they were dog ass. They aren't dog ass this year. They are legitimately good. They have a team that can go all the way. I don't know that they'll win the World Series, but I don't think that there's a team left that I would pick over the Yankees in a playoff series in the American League, at least. So yeah. that's gonna be my pick. Maybe it'll come back to bite me, but you know, I think that's what happens. On to the National League. Do you want to go first?
We ended up where we left off post wild card. We had the Brewers and the Phillies lined up, and we had the Padres and the Dodgers lined up. So in the Brewers and Phillies series that we have predicted, or that I have predicted, forgot you took the Mets there. I've got the Phillies in 3 over Milwaukee. I do think that the Brewers are very good. I think Pat Murphy will win the National League Manager of the Year. That is an award that goes ALNL, right? Yeah, it is.
There's two for each. Okay. Yeah,
I had to think about it. Yes, I do think Pat Murphy will win NL Manager of the Year. And their bullpen is that good. I do think that the Phillies are one of those 2 or 3 teams that are just kind of better than everybody else. And I do have the Phillies winning this series in 3 games. The Brewers are very good. They're also very young. So I don't expect much from Jackson Chourio this playoffs. He's 20 years old. He could completely prove me wrong. They have a very young lineup in general. And I mean, this is a Rhys Hoskins revenge series, so that could be kind of fun. But I think that with their youth and their youth and their pitching, they will be back. But this is not going to be their year in the DS. I think they get pushed out by the Phillies in 3 games. Moving on to the Padres and the Dodgers. Now, this is probably going to be an unpopular opinion if this ends up where it's going, because everybody is going to love the Dodgers. The Dodgers, I think, just don't get it done. And again, this has been the problem for years, except this time it's more pronounced because it's not just that their guys won't get it done, it's that they actually don't have any starters. They have no pitching for this, I think. So I have the Padres going into LA without home field advantage and beating the Dodgers in 5 games. I have this game going all the way the distance. And I have the Padres taking it in 5. For all the reasons we talked about earlier, Padres have fantastic pitching. Dodgers, not so much. Back end of their bullpen is kind of weak, and they really are hurting for starting pitching. So we will see if their lineup is enough to slug their way through, but I don't think I like the Dodgers' chances in a 5-gamer against the Padres. That gives us Philly and San Diego in the CS.
2022 rematch. Padres.
Yes, a rematch also. So there's something there as well. One team lost that last time, and I don't think that that goes the same way this time. I've got the Padres in 7, and I've got a rematch of the 1998 World Series for the chip.
I love
Padres,
it.
Yankees over Padres in 7 games.
Okay. I agree with you first that I think we're going to see a 2022 rematch in the NLCS. I agree with you that the Dodgers just simply don't have the pitching for this, and the Padres do. I think it might just simply come down to that. I think the Dodgers, like, they have 3 of the 10, maybe 5 best hitters in all of baseball. And they have Teoscar Hernandez, and they have a very good catcher in Will Smith. They do have some weak spots in their lineup, like Miguel Rojas. I mean, that is a guy who he could hit into a couple double plays a game for you and kill all your rallies. Like, how, 36?
35.
Okay.
That's short. Still playing shortstop.
Yeah. I mean, they need a shortstop so bad. It's like they've been plugging shortstops. Like, Gavin Lux being bad was a disaster for them.
Bed.
Disaster.
That is brutal.
Chris Taylor
is still kicking.
I'm going to take the Padres in this series. I think Manny Machado is going to be out for blood. Tatis is going to want to reclaim his superstar status on the national stage. And ultimately, the Padres, I think, just have more arms. That said, I think Shohei Ohtani, either they just walk him every time or he goes absolutely nuclear. I think we're going to see some tungsten arm O'Doyle resurgence in this series. I think the Padres will take it in 5. I think it goes all the way there. As for Phillies Mets, which would be my prediction, I said a lot of nice things about the Mets pitching, but I think it ends there. Philly's just too good. I mean, the top of their rotation, I mean, when it turns into a playoff rotation, Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Christopher Sanchez, that's as good as any trio remaining. It's probably the best. Maybe not the Padres. I don't know. That would be a really fun series with pitching in particular. There'd be a lot of talented arms if it goes there, and I think it will. So, I think I would take the Phillies in 3. I don't know if I even give the Mets a single win in that series. It's nice of me to put them there, but that's as far as I'm going. So I'm going
either way,
with,
we have the Phillies moving on in a 3-gamer.
Yeah. So we both have Phillies Padres in the NLCS. You have a 1998 rematch projected. I have a 2009 rematch projected. I am going with the Phillies. I think they take the NLCS in 6. Why not? I think we have Yankees, Phillies. That series would seem like a bit of a toss up to me, honestly. True, like 50-50 down the middle.
With the World Series.
Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola would be very good at the top of a playoff rotation. The Yankees don't hit lefties. I don't know how they do against Christopher Sanchez.
Yep.
I don't know how
Soto
I feel about
torturing
the
his old
pen.
Punching bag.
Oh, that's
Philly.
Tough.
And Jazz. Don't forget Soto and Jazz.
I know.
Both NL East guys.
Yeah.
Actually, either way, Soto gets to do some. I've got also Soto against the Padres. I didn't even think about that. That's a fun storyline.
You know what? I'm going to be rooting for the Yankees, but I'll hedge my bets. Give me the Phillies. I think they would take that series. I think they'd take it in 7.
Good argument. Like, there is a very good argument that Philly wins a 7 game against the Yankees. Like, that their starting pitching
but
is
like,
so good.
Here's the thing.
And dangerous.
If it was the first one to win 10 instead of 4, I think this would go 19. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would watch every game with those two teams matched up against each other.
Absolutely.
I think they're very, very good. Like, if it's not the Phillies, I think it's the Dodgers probably.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I also, though, people
like,
think
I
that
the
lineups
losing. I know I have
aren't
losing.
That equal. They kind of are. With that. Like they the Phillies lineup is similar to the Yankees lineup in a lot of ways. Like it's a little bit deeper.
Totally
like
a is. Little. No, it totally is. I'm with
but
you.
But I don't think it's by much, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Trey Turner's a like, better Anthony Volpe. Harper and Judge are kind of the equivalents, you could say. Schwarber and yep. Stanton. There are a lot of comparisons there. But
Bryson Stott's not as good as Gleyber Torres.
Sure.
I don't think Alec Bohm is as good as Jazz. Like in a big spot, I think I would rather have Jazz than Alec Bohm, even though I love Alec Bohm. Like, but that's a tough one. Like,
yeah, that's a good question, actually. Who'd you rather have, Bohm or Jazz?
In the long run, probably Alec Bohm. But right now, with
I actually
a big, in a, like,
disagree
in a
with
big
you there.
Spot,
I think in the long run, I'd take Jazz. But I don't know.
He's
big
flexible
spot.
On defense. So you like that.
Yeah.
But he's got showmanship. I know. Like, I mean, I don't know. It's tough.
That is a tough
that's
one.
A really close
that's a really tough one.
That's a good question.
I think I'd lean Jazz.
But we can save that for when we get there.
Yes. I hope we get
also,
there.
Also, JT Romuto as an old man versus a really young, hot Austin Wells. Like,
yeah,
who's
okay.
got the edge? Like, I mean, that's you could easily say JT Romuto, but like, I don't know. He's kind of had a down year. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like that was just still a 109 OPS plus. But like, that's still a down year for him. I don't know. Like, it's tough to say.
Johan Rojas versus Trent Grisham.
Honestly, I honestly don't know enough about Johan Rojas to make an argument.
Well, okay.
Edmundo Sosa versus Oswaldo Cabrera.
There we go.
I think I'd take Oswaldo.
You got me stumped on that one. I honestly
fun
don't
stuff.
Know.
I will say their bullpen is better than ours by a good amount.
Yeah. So. If the Yankees lose, I think it might be because of the pen. I don't love the bullpen.
Yeah, Alvarado's disgusting. Carlos Estevez is disgusting. They've got like weapons on weapons.
Do you want to wrap our playoff preview there and our World Series predictions? I think we covered it all.
It's a little predictable that we both ended up with the Yanks in the World Series, but if there's a year to say it, this is it, honestly. Like, it is, call us homers all you want. I don't think that that's like a
I think we
a
have
weak
the
take or bias
track record
this year.
Of
I think it's the
projecting
way
the Yankees to be good when they're good and bad when they're bad. Like 2021 sure. was a reformative experience for me. Like when they were supposed to be so good and they were horrible, I was like, I'm going to actually try to like analyze the teams myself a little more because I could have seen that they had eight big donkeys, as Luke Voigt said in their lineup that year.
Dude,
I don't know.
It's true. That was like the most pathetic team that I've seen rolled out. It was worse than last year's roster on opening day, which is saying something. And I say that specifically on opening day. And last year's team missed the playoffs. That's a good way to put it. It's easy to be blinded. I don't think we are.
A few closing notes just before we wrap up the pod. Buster Posey named the president of operations for the Giants today. What do you make
What's
of that?
That?
Farhan gone. Buster Posey in.
Was shocked because I actually kind of like the way that the Giants were moving in the last like two seasons. I know they couldn't get people to agree to their free agent offers, but like they've done a pretty good job of drafting and a pretty good job of signing like the free agents that they've gotten. Like Snell looked great this year. Matt Chapman's a good extension. Bryce Eldridge is going to be a freaking stud. Like I think Elliot Ramos, they picked up out of nowhere. He's going to like, you know, well, he looked good this year. We'll see if it's a flash in the pan. Like, I don't know. They had some good pieces. Like I was surprised to see that. Also, like, I'm not sure how I feel about former players becoming GMs. I like the idea of it. You know, on paper, it sounds nice. I just don't know how effective it'll be, especially because I'm pretty sure Buster Posey has said some weird stuff in the past about why people don't want to go to San Francisco. So we'll see how it goes for them.
Yeah, that's interesting. Posey, yeah, I mean, it seems very new. Like, Posey only just retired like a year or two ago, and now here he is already being thrust into this role. I might disagree with you a little bit about liking how Farhad had been running the Giants for the past couple of years. Like, it felt very uninspired to me. Like, they were sort of like the Red Sox of the NL, just like you could tell they were going to go 81-81, like exactly. And like they had pieces, but like it wasn't ever going to lead to anything special, really. And like you said, they failed to draw in like the big fish, like however many years in a row at this point. So it's like, and however many times, because it was like multiple times over the past couple of years where they went after somebody and they just didn't get him. So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Buster Posey can turn around the San Francisco roster. Something to be said about former catchers. I mean, a lot of those guys, I think, end up usually managers, but this is the first time I can remember one going into a front office role. But yeah, I truly did not expect to see that today. So that was a huge shock. Two more things. Just this one's kind of fun. The All-Star Game Unis. They have announced that that players will be able to wear their team's uniform in the All-Star Game like it was when we were growing up, instead of these like collective American National League ugly ass jerseys. I am so about it. I think I love this. I would think they never should have gotten rid of the old way they did it. I'm a total All-Star Game uniform boomer. Bring it back, and they did, so hell yeah.
That's not even being a boomer, it's just being ripe. Mm-hmm. It just looks so much better. Yeah. Electric. It's going to be fantastic next season. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, and the last thing I want to say,
thank you, baseball, for finally listening and doing the right thing.
Yes.
Once.
Right?
Good job.
Like, it's actually reporting that they did something that we like. I'm sure they're going to fuck it up somehow, but...
A good feeling.
The last thing I want to say this week, fuck the Triple Crown. I'm so over caring about this as a concept. If we're naming three statistics to represent offensive production and Shohei Ohtani narrowly missed out on one to Luis Arraez, come on. Like, that to me is, that should be the thing that forever drives people against the legitimacy of the Triple Crown, is like a massive feat. Like, if a player does it, that's great, but also, like, it's so easy for something like this to happen where literally the least exciting, like, batting average player can narrowly beat out, like, the best player of all time for this. So it's like, I don't care. But yeah,
like, I'm with you. Like, I mean, I like the historical aspect of, like, that's what we, you know, that's what we go with when we talk about the Triple Crown. But really quick, and maybe not really quick, I just want to read out all of the categories, if I may, that Aaron Judge led in this season.
Do it.
Can I? Do you mind?
Okay. Do it.
WAR for position players, 10.8. Offensive WAR, 11.7. On base percentage, 458. Slugging percentage, 701. On base plus slugging, 1.159. Then we have home runs, 58. RBIs, 144. Walks, 133. Adjusted OPS plus, 223. Runs created, 183. Adjusted batting runs, 99. Adjusted batting wins, whatever the hell that is, 9.8. Times on base, 322. Offensive win percentage, 870. Intentional walks, 20. At bats per home run, 9.6. Base out runs added, 95.6, whatever the hell that is. Situational wins added, whatever that is, 9.3. Base out wins added, don't know what that is either, 9.3. Then we end up with wins above replacement overall as a whole, 10.8. But he didn't win the Triple Crown, so who cares?
He won the, like, octuple crown at that point.
I don't even know how many I just said. I should ask you to count. Like,
batting average thing, like, is fine when it's Bobby Witt Jr., but when it's Luis Arraez, like, come on. Luis Arraez is not good. I'm sorry. That's my hot take of the week. I'm over Luis Arraez.
Luis Arraez is good, but
he's good
but
at one thing. He's literally good at one thing. He puts the bat on the ball.
He's very good at
it. He doesn't
hit
it far.
But he hit 314 this year.
He's not fast. If he was fast,
Judge, what did Judge hit?
If he was fast, I would like him. Like,
Judge hit 322.
Yeah,
Luis Arraez hit 314.
Yeah,
and like that's all he does. So like,
literally.
Now again, Luis Arraez is good. I don't want to, you know, don't get me wrong. However, he hit 318 with 41 RBIs
and a 109 WRC
four
plus,
homers, a 108 OPS plus.
Yeah,
like,
great.
That's good not.
I don't care.
That's not. Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. 46 RBIs. I was looking at his Padres total only. 46 RBIs, 314 average, 392 slug. 392 slug. Yeah. 739 OPS. He hit 314 with a 739 OPS.
This is the player.
Oh, my God.
This is the player leading exactly one of the hits. Three categories handpicked to represent the best possible offensive season over Shohei Ohtani. Yeah. So that's just what I want to say. Maybe we don't care about Triple Crown so much moving forward. That's the last thing that I wanted to
By
say.
By the way,
this week.
All of those things that I read off of that judge was leading in, Ohtani was eligible for, just throwing it out there.
Yeah, okay.
So one player would have won
better,
the MVP.
Better
over the other.
Offensive
they were in
season.
The same league.
I agree. It's a better offensive season for Judge.
And
slightly.
Did Ohtani pitch this year?
He did not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think that's going to do it for us this week.
He will in the playoffs, by the way, which is going to be
No,
nuts,
he's not. He's not pitching in the playoffs. It's not going to happen.
I think it'll happen.
Well, I'm glad we are on the record as disagreeing about something, because we had so many of the same picks for the playoffs.
A few things. We got the Mets and the Brewers, and we've got the whether or not Ohtani will pitch in the playoffs. So we'll see who's right. Come back next week.
We hope you all enjoyed our playoff preview and predictions. If you haven't already, go sign up for the Mudville Patreon at patreon.com/Mudville. You can get all of our stuff. You can get notified anytime we release anything, whether it be a main feed episode like today, an episode of the Staub Brothers New York Sports, which is coming back soon to celebrate the return of the NBA, as well
could
as
be this
the
weekend.
NFL. Oh,
keep an
exciting.
Eye out.
Love to hear
possibly midweek next week.
I might even hop in on one of those with you guys to complain about Aaron Rodgers because I'm pretty sick of his ass. But
there's a lot to dig into.
So
maybe we can tackle that.
If you want all that, like we said, patreon.com/Mudville. Whole lot of fun coming up. We're going to talk about Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis soon. We're going to get Tony back for that, hopefully next week. So lot of exciting stuff to be talked about in the next month or so. One more time, if you haven't heard it already, go subscribe, patreon.com/Mudville. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed our preview. I have been one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I've been your other host, Brody Staub.
And we
enjoy
will
the playoffs.
See you all on the other side. Enjoy the playoffs, everybody.